Okay. All right. Well, we're going to go to Proverbs tonight. And I've been trying to figure out, we looked last time we were together in Proverbs at some of the Proverbs dealing with the subject of worship. And I'm thinking that is probably the best way for us to tackle at least for the next few Wednesday nights, is to look at some of the topical things. And you'll find these Proverbs sprinkled all the way through the book. And so what I'm going to try to do tonight is we're just going to go down through a list of things dealing with the topic of work. We in our culture, we have no conception of the change that occurred at the Protestant Reformation over the idea of work. You have to understand that until that time, under the Catholic system, you've got the clergy and you've got the laity. And the only body whose work was valuable is that of the clergy. After the Reformation, one of the things that changed was the idea that, wait a minute, no, all of work, everybody has something to do, and we can glorify God in our secular jobs. Now that seems so not, you know, okay, well, that's a no-brainer to us, but we don't realize that that was one of the results. And we have what we call today the Protestant work ethic. That's where it stems from, is the idea that the Reformation taught, along with many other things, the idea that one's secular work was a tool by which we could glorify God. And that's a revolutionary idea. I think that accounts for some of the reasons why, in general, the Latin cultures, the places where Roman Catholicism dominate, typically don't have that work ethic. Work is not viewed in the same sense that we do, and as a result, you just sort of look at the world where the Roman Catholicism dominates, and you're generally dealing with a poverty-stricken area to a large degree. Not without exception, but in general, that's the case. And I blame a lot of it on the Catholic Church, along with the idea that in many places, and I'm thinking of Latin America in particular, where the corruption is so rampant in government, and a lot of that stemming, I think, from Roman Catholicism, where basically what you're really doing in their system is bribing the priest. You're paying the priest off. Well, the idea of them paying a bribe under the table just sort of gets ingrained in the culture and gets to be the expected thing. So anyway, tonight I want us to take a look at some of these Proverbs dealing with this subject. I was on the phone with Phil Newton this afternoon, pastor over at Southwoods Baptist, and in our conversation, he mentioned that he had a professor that he had at Southeastern Seminary years ago who was going to be there at their church tonight speaking on a particular subject. And I asked him, well, what is it? And he said, it's the subject of excellence. Excellent. And he said, I was in school when he wrote this book. And he said, him writing the book, it had a profound effect on his own life. The way he said, I saw him change as he was writing this book. And he said, it affected all of us. And it's the idea that everything you do, you need to do in excellence because it is for the glory of God. And here in Proverbs, we have this whole section that deals with the subject of your secular work, how you are to approach your secular work. And some of it's just good common sense, as we say, sanctified common sense. But these are principles that we just sort of take for granted. But let's think through them tonight. We're going to start in Proverbs chapter 12. Remember, in our study, we sort of got up through chapter 9, which was the parable about extolling wisdom. And then starting in chapter 11, we have just a ton of Proverbs, and as I say, these things are seemingly the only order they're in is random order. There's no rhyme or reason. But let's look at some of these tonight. Let's look at this one first. In Proverbs 10:11, it says, a righteous man regardeth the life of his beast, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. He that tilleth his land shall be satisfied with bread, but he that followeth vain persons is void of understanding. Let's think back, flip back to the front there, Wesley. A righteous man regardeth the life of his beast. How many of you have a beast at home? Now, I'm not talking about Fido or Rex, a beast of burden, a beast that you use in your work. Well, nobody does, except, well, you do have a pickup truck, don't you? You got a work truck, you got a vehicle, and so forth. We don't have beasts that eat hay and straw and things of that nature in our culture. But what is this talking about? It's talking about the tools, the things that you're going to have. A farmer to grow a crop has to have beasts to till the land. And so notice, the righteous man regardeth the life of his beast. Now, what is that telling you about your work? What's the principle here? Y'all don't be bashful tonight. Come on, just talk. There's no wrong answers. Take care of your tools. Take care of your stuff. This, if you take care of this, it'll take care of you. That's the idea. Exactly. And the interesting part is the second line, the tender mercy. Anybody ever see the movie Tender Mercies? Oh, y'all ought to see that. That Robert Duvall won, what was it, Best Picture, Robert? I mean, you talk about, well, two reasons. Number one, it's the Blackland Prairie down there around Waxahachie, Texas, where it was filmed. And that's the area I grew up in, the Blackland Prairie. And the houses they show, it looks just like the stuff that was out there when I was growing up as a kid. So it brings back lots of memories down there around Ennis and Waxahachie. And but the lesson in that movie is fascinating, the moral of the story. Did you enjoy it, Robert? I've seen it several times. It's one of those things I keep wanting to go back and look at it, watch it some more. At the end of the movie, this guy is just, Robert Duvall's character is just utterly befuddled at what the mercies that he has received that weren't given to somebody else that was more deserving. It's an interesting story. So anyway, if you ever run into the movie Tender Mercies, I think it's clean. I think. I think he's drunk in the first part of it. It may be some bad language, but it's a story of his God transforming his life. It's a very fascinating story. And again, filmed in the general area of Texas, this Blackland Prairie where I grew up. So a lot of it really strikes home to me. But anyway, the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. If the tender mercies are cruel, what do you think the bad things are? Do you get the picture that the man who is righteous takes care of his animal, but the tender mercies, the kindnesses of the wicked man, is cruel and harsh to the same animal, it would seem. So in other words, have you ever noticed that one of the signs of somebody being a serial killer is that they're cruel to animals? And you begin to see that principle is here. So he that tilleth his land, go ahead, Wesley, shall be satisfied with bread. But he that followeth vain persons is void of understanding. The contrast is the person who's doing his job will have something to eat. The fellow who follows the vain person, vain has the sense of empty, good for nothing. He's not only void of bread, he's void of understanding. Okay, so there's an example of one of these proverbs dealing with work. Let's go to the second one. That's right. We got that going to be showing up several times here. The grit, you know, people that are just absolutely hooked every time some get rich quick. Say that fast, three times. You were talking about get rich quick scheme comes along. There are those that if they just work at a regular job as hard as they work at these schemes, they'd be rich. But they're always looking for the easy way out rather than just tilling the land. Okay, the next one. The hand of the diligent shall bear rule, but the slothful shall be under tribute. What's that saying? Robert? They get advanced, they get the promotions. The slothful shall be under tribute. Tribute here, you owe something, you owe a tax, it would seem that they're always making payments. Charles? Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Right, right.
Yep, you're right. We live in a culture that if you are diligent, there's not many reasons why you shouldn't get ahead to some degree. I mean, we realize God has to smile upon you and bless the works of your hands. But in our culture, you really got to work hard. Work hard not to be working hard. But the problem is, part of it is our system tends to discourage somebody at the low end ever working their way out of it because they can stay in the low end without doing anything. Keith Murphy brought up 25 guys from Mexico, central Mexico, to get the potato harvest out this year. And it was a lot of trouble. They had to work out an arrangement with motel there in Senatobia. They bought a bus, big school bus that was wrecked up here in Tennessee. They have a law in Tennessee, if a bus ever been in a wreck, they got to take it out of service. So they pick up a cheap bus up in Tennessee that had been in a wreck, and they use that bus to transport these guys out to the farm and so forth. Well, anyway, last Monday night, they had sort of an end-of-the-season dinner for them up here at Ryan's, and they asked them where they wanted to go, and they told them about this thing called a buffet, and they lit up at the thought of being able to just go back and back and back, you know. So that's where they went, and they invited me to come up and meet these guys. And their leader, their honcho, he's the only one who can speak English. So for that reason, he's their leader, and his name is Chiano. And he is a Christian. And I got talking to him a little bit. I said, how did you come to know the Lord? And he said, it was in this country. I said, where? And he said, up in St. Louis. And I said, well, what kind of church? He said, well, it was at a sort of a Baptist church. And I said, well, that's sort of what we are, sort of a Baptist church. Anyway, but he said, all these other guys are Catholic. But I'm a Christian. And very, very impressive young man. But Keith, why I bring all this up, he says, you have no idea. He said, you think it's a lot of trouble to bring these guys up and get them in a motel and get them back and forth? He said, it has just lifted the weight of the world off of my shoulders having these guys here who want to work. Said, when we pull up in that bus in the morning, they're sitting out waiting on us. And he said, we gave them an hour off for lunch, and they said, that's too long. We don't need an hour. Let us work half an hour. We'll take half an hour and work the other half an hour. He said, they're begging to work. They're already asking. The first day he asked them if they had any questions, and one of them raised their hand, can we come back next year? You know, and he said, it's just so different from whom the people they've had to deal with for so many years, and said it's just taken a tremendous load off their shoulders. So it's, anyway, you get the picture. All right, next one. The soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. Very much along the same lines. Notice the soul of the sluggard, he wants stuff, but he doesn't have it because of his slothfulness. The soul of the diligent shall be made fat. Pretty obvious. Okay, let's go to the next one, Wesley. There is that maketh himself rich, yet hath nothing. There is that maketh himself poor, yet hath great riches. There are paradoxes in the Proverbs. This is one of them. That there are things more valuable than money. And I think that's what this proverb is saying. Charles? Okay. You think it may be talking about putting on airs or not putting on airs? Big hat, no cattle. Yeah, good Texas expression. You bet. Yeah. They've consciously, the cars they bought in the community I grew up in, anything that was ostentatious was frowned upon. You didn't go out and buy some fancy thing and show off. You just didn't do that. It was interesting. Now, today, all that's gone out the window, but that is an interesting thing. Okay, next, Wesley. Anybody, any other comments on that? You can go back to recording. Wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished, but he that gathereth by labor shall increase. We're talking about get-rich-quick schemes a while ago. And notice, what is our expression? Easy come, easy go. Wealth gotten by vanity, the easy way, perhaps a crooked way, shall be diminished. Why do you suppose that, Cindy? Yeah. Your kids, yeah, need to learn delayed gratification. That everything is not easy or instant. And something that you've had to save for and work for and earn. I mean, obviously you as a parent can control that to a degree. I'm not saying that you don't give them stuff, but there is a sense in which you can arrange things to whereby they earn their way. And that's much more valuable. It's a valuable lesson to the child that there's something to be gained by being diligent, working, doing your chores, whatever you got to do to make it where they earn their way. And the fact that they don't just get it instantly and easily, that waiting is a good lesson. We don't like that. But, and of course, grandparents come along and ruin the whole thing. But parents need to instill those values. Any other? Yeah, Tim? Wealth gotten by vanity in Hollywood. Yeah, that's, Tim should know. He just got back from California. Were you out there auditioning? Was that the deal? Yeah. They didn't want you. Send him back. There are, and unfortunately, you realize what our culture, the only export of any value to anybody else in the world today is our movies and our, such as it is. And it's about the only commodities we can do better than anybody else. You remember how when you used to see a movie made in Britain, it was always like a soap, watching the old soap operas. Y'all remember the old soap operas, you know, the organ music, and it's just cheap and chintzy. And you see some of these foreign films made in Britain or Canada, and they all have the look of cheap about them. I mean, one thing we can do, we can make good movies. And that's about the only thing we can make that the rest of the world wants anymore. All right, we'll go on. Where no oxen are. This is Buddy Abbott's famous line. Where no oxen are, the crib is clean. But much increase is by the strength of the ox. The idea is, if you want an ox, you're going to have to shovel some manure. You want a clean stall. You don't have a clean stall when you have an ox. Do you see the principle? That there is work that goes along with having an oxen. You got to keep the stall clean. But notice the ox amplifies your labors. Now, let me ask, what would be a modern parallel to that? How would that translate? I don't think any of you have any oxen out back. Yeah, Charles? Sawdust in your shop. That's a good idea. If there's no sawdust, that means there's no work, right? And yet at the same time, you're going to have to shovel a little sawdust. I'm sorry? Right. There's the maintenance that is necessary for, that's what's happening here. You're maintaining the ox and his stall, his crib, in the same sense that there is a certain amount of maintenance that has to be performed. Tim? Okay. I'm not going to comment. But no, you're right. I mean, nothing that ever gets used, then it never gets dirty. If you never have any dirty dishes in the sink, it's because nothing ever gets cooked. Beth? Yep. You want the blessing, you're going to have to put up with the other. Right. Yeah? Yeah. Mountains of... Where did I go wrong? Yeah. I went to college for this. I didn't have to do it every day, but once a year I would go out to the... Actually, it's an old converted house where I kept the sheep, and it would just get packed down on the floor, you know, over the winter. So we'd go out in the spring and literally with a pick, break it up, shovel it out, get back down to the floor, maybe a foot of stuff. But that's the point. You want the blessing, there's going to be some responsibility, there's going to be some maintenance. All right, next. The way of the slothful man is as a hedge of thorns, but the way of the righteous is made plain. Charles, read that in the NIV. That's Proverbs 15:19. Well, similar. What do you think that's saying? Okay. Well, the thing that struck me when I was looking at this was I'm wondering if this is talking about, like, from the standpoint of the employer, that the slothful man just never gets anywhere. The path through, if we're talking about the path here, one of them being smooth and plain, the other being as a hedge of thorns, what would that mean? Well, the guy going through a hedge of thorns is never gets anywhere. You're just always hung up. It's like working your way through a bunch of brambles as opposed to being on a smooth path. And so that the slothful man is just constantly spinning his wheels and getting nowhere. It's in other words, I'm looking at this from the standpoint of an employer, that it's so frustrating because here you've got this guy. It's not that he's doing nothing. It's just like molasses in January, never accomplishing anything. Yeah, Michael? Well, maybe so. We're talking really slothful if we're talking the thorns growing up around him. I don't know. It's a mysterious thing, but I think that's what he's saying, is that the slothful man just never gets anything accomplished, just constantly aggravating. And if you've ever worked with someone, have any testimonials here, but worked with someone like that, that's, it's almost, they're worse than no help. Really, because you count on them, and they don't do it. It doesn't happen. And so not only do you have to do it, what you would have had to do anything, but now you've got the frustration of the delay, the so forth, the disappointment, and all that. So there is something worse than having no help. And I think that's what this is implying. Okay, next. Wesley. He also that is slothful in his work is brother to him that is a great waster. They're from the same family tree. He also that is slothful in his work is brother to him that is a great waster. All right, what's the principle here? What are we? A great destroyer? To lay waste to something would be to destroy it. Okay? Yeah, they're right. You've wasted the time. Then you got to follow behind them, clean up. Yeah, yeah, right. The frustration, and then you get to pay them on top of that for the aggravation. All right, next, Wesley, what we got? Slothfulness casteth into a deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer. The deep sleep here seems to be just into utter insensitivity to what's going on, and therefore suffering, hunger, doing, being in want, being. Laura, that's a good observation. That work breeds work, idleness breeds idleness. The idle man, I knew a fella, I called him Crazy Ed. He was over in Rock Springs, Wyoming, and he worked at the Jim Bridger power plant over there. They were building this big power plant. And there was a reason I called him Crazy Ed. I'll tell you about the guy. But anyway, he would literally pick up a 2x4. There's a gigantic work site. This huge power plant they were building. He would pick up a 2x4 and walk around all day with a 2x4. That's all he did. In other words, he's looking for ways not to work, basically. So he's just walking around with 2x4. Everybody thought he's doing something. But actually, he's working at not working. And I think that's what it just breeds, that kind of wastefulness. All right, next. A slothful man, we had this one once before as an example of a sarcastic proverb. A slothful man hideth his hand in his bosom and will not so much as bring it to his mouth again. Now that's lazy. That you're so lazy, you won't even bring the spoon to your mouth. Obviously this is sarcasm, okay? This is parody. But how true. That he won't even go to the trouble to feed himself. He wants to be spoon-fed rather than bringing his hand up to his mouth. Now, that's lazy, you'd have to admit. But again, that fits a broad spectrum of our day. All right, next. The sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold. Therefore shall he beg and harvest and have nothing. He says it's too cold. Be out there plowing. What is that telling you? In other words, again, this is obviously couched in the ancient world when you're out there with an ox. But what's the point of this? How would that translate? You're looking for a reason not to do it. And if you're looking for a reason not to do it, you will always find a reason not to do it, right? And the fact is, sometimes you got to plow when it's cold. In other words, you can't let every little obstacle stop you in your work, or you're not going to accomplish anything. And that's the point of the proverb. And you think of how that translates over to the modern world that we do, you know, again, do we do everything we do just trying to figure out a reason not to go to work, not to go in, not to do our job when we get there? And it's too hot, it's too cold, it's too wet, it's too dry. Being on a farm, there was always something. The weather, I never heard a farmer ever say, aren't we having perfect weather? There's always something. But the one thing about it, they never let the weather stand in their way. If they could get in the field, they were in the field. You better be ready to go. You better not let every little thing hinder you, or you're not going to get a crop in. Yeah, Beth? Starvation, yeah. Right, it just reinforces laziness. Great. Sharon? When are you just encouraging more of the same? Yeah. What do you mean, my generation? Okay. Oh, my. Oh, well, that's good to know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we think you're a pretty worthless bunch, you know, in general. But, well, no, I think there is. What I'm seeing today is 45-year-old men still living at home with mama sitting on the couch playing games all day. That's what's going on. It's almost like a drug. The technology, that entertainment has become almost like dope that destroys all initiative. And very much content just to sit and play video games all day. And you know, there is a certain sense in which every generation looks at the next one and saying the whole world's going to pot, you know. But I think there are special things happening today that we have and more things to encourage that behavior is the problem. But here, again is the sober facts that and yet at the same time, there are some extremely gifted, dedicated, hardworking young people today that are working hard to get ahead. And it's just that they oftentimes get lost in the numbers. So, yeah, there's some impressive people out there that are doing their best to succeed and be. And it's back to that topic there that Southwood's doing tonight, excellence. There's that sense, that drive to excel in what they're doing rather than just being content with the whole hum. Okay, Wesley, go a little further. We got to cycle through here. The desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor. He coveteth greedily all the day long, but the righteous giveth and spareth not. The desire of the slothful killeth him. Well, I guess he's wasting away. Because it won't work. But then he covets, all he does is all day long covets greedily. He wants. And then the righteous man gives and spares. In other words, the righteous man has a surplus and is willing to give it. The slothful man just wants. We tend to think that greed and wealth go hand in hand. It's not true. Some of the greediest people I've ever known in my life were very poor people. Steve Long, most of y'all remember, was telling me about the area of Springfield where he's living in inner city Springfield. And he and one other man on his entire street get up and go to work in the morning. He said everybody else living on government check, most on disability, said they may have five or six of them living in a house, pooling their checks to get by. But he said the most interesting thing about what he's discovered is that in any contact you have with people in the area where he is, he says, you may be talking about the weather, you may be talking about sports. He says, what is going on in their mind is, what can I get out of you? It's all about, what can I get? The greed. And it's an interesting observation that everybody becomes an object for me to try to exploit. And if somebody's got money and means, then they're a fair target for me to exploit. All right? Next, Wesley. The slothful man saith, There is a lion without, and I shall be slain in the streets. This is similar to the cold. You got a good excuse. There's a lion out there. Well, there's always something out there. There's always some sort of danger. There's always some. In other words, the problem is, can you find a life completely devoid of risk? There's always going to be risk. Yeah, Cindy? Yeah, we don't want to be reckless. I'm not, but this obviously is more than that. This is just saying, I heard about a lion one time. There could be lions out there. Yeah, Tim? Yeah, that's true. You've always got a parachute. They'll make a movie of you. Yeah. Okay, but it's along the same lines. We want to play it safe, and there's a sense in which nothing ventured, nothing gained. Okay. Prepare thy work without and make it fit for thyself in the field, and afterwards build thine house. What's he saying? Yeah. That's right. Yeah. It's about priorities here. You'll notice the contrast is between doing your work in the field first and then later prepare your house, work on your house. We found that in Haggai in a study there in last spring of the fact that they had come back, started building the temple, and then got sidetracked. And they were building their own houses rather than finishing God's house. It's a question of priority. Nothing wrong with having a nice house, but it's a question of priority. Okay, next. Okay. In a mud roof. Yeah. First priority was get the crop in, because everything else is going to come from that. All right. I went by the field of the slothful and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding, and lo, it was all grown over with thorns, and nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. Then I saw and considered it well. I looked upon it and received instruction. Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that travaileth, and thy want as an armed man. Interesting stuff. And again, growing up in rural area, farmers were proud of how their fields looked, that they kept it clean. And a farmer that let Johnson grass, you know, weeds grow up in his field was, you didn't want that guy farming your land. You wanted to find the farmer who kept it clean. There's a sense in which that's what he's saying here. I'm looking for this guy's vineyard, his field, and it's all grown up with nettles and thorns, and the wall around it, which kept the animals out, has been broken down. He's not maintaining it. And so the point is, I learned a lesson from that. Do the flip here. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands. Was it Beth? You're talking about sleeping just a little longer. I just want to roll over one more time. I just don't want to get out of bed. It's too cold. I just want to stay here a little longer. Let me sleep. And the point is that slothfulness begets slothfulness. A little sleep never satisfies. You just want a little more. And so what he's saying is that pattern of behavior leads to poverty, and your travail, thy want, comes as an armed man. In other words, like a thief that takes it away from you, your slothfulness. And notice all of these things then pointing you back to that point of excellence, that we are to strive to do with as to the glory of God. That's, you understand, that's one of the principles of the New Testament, is whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Do a good job. Whatever you do, do it well. Do it as unto the Lord. We keep running into that, as if the Lord was your boss. All right, next. The slothful man saith, this is similar to what we had, there's a lion in the way, a lion is in the streets. And as the door turneth upon his hinges, so doth the slothful upon his bed. Rolling over. The slothful hideth his hand in his bosom. It grieveth him to bring it again to his mouth. The sluggard is wiser in his own conceit than seven men that can render a reason. These are a compilation of some of the ones that we had earlier, sort of putting them all together. Okay, next one. Burning lips and a wicked heart, or like a potsherd covered with silver dross. I must have given you the wrong text. Yeah, I did. Let's go to this next one. It's the last one. He that tilleth his land shall have plenty of bread, but he that falleth after vain persons shall have poverty enough. In other words, we follow the vain person, and I'm assuming that's the get-rich-quick guy, the flim-flam man, the scam artist. We fall for the, or perhaps the robber. We join in with the gang, and notice the man who tills his land, does what he's supposed to do, has plenty of bread, but these have poverty. Okay, well, anything you didn't know already? But they're helpful reminders, aren't there? That whatever we do, we should do excellently. We should serve, do it as unto Christ and serving Him. Any comments? That's what I would like to do for the next two or three times, is to just look like this. We have this whole area dealing with our secular work and how we approach work, how we think about work, how do we work at work. And then we have other topics. How you raise your kids, how you do your business relationships, economics, those things. We find themes running through the book of Proverbs. So that's what I'm going to try to do the next few weeks, just sort of look through it. I think that's the easiest way of covering this big, bulky section here, about 20 chapters of these random Proverbs. Any comments? Everybody ready to get up in the morning and hit them hard? Yeah, I find myself dealing with procrastination, you know, the idea of I can put this off, and it would have been easy to have just done it, and now putting it off makes the task 10 times harder because you put it off. You didn't do it. So I had no incentive to work. Yeah. Well, I don't even want to get in what my daughter and son-in-law that work over at the Arsenal in Huntsville, the stories they tell of people who are making huge salaries that do absolutely nothing. I mean, some of the stories they tell, you just can't believe this goes on, but they're government employees. They can't get rid of them. And usually, you know how they get rid of them? Promote them. It's the only way to get them out. So it just make you sick, your tax dollars at work. Thanks. But yeah, you're right that there are people who work hard not working. And to me, I've just been in situations where I didn't have that much to do. You talk about making a day long when you have nothing to do. That there's a sense in which working and being busy at something is good therapy. It's good psychology. It makes the day fly. Whereas you just killing time, it takes forever for quitting time to roll around. Yes, Cindy? There's a sense in which we don't have a lot of control of what goes on outside our circle. I guess I am, if I were to rate what I see in the children and young people coming up in our church, I think we can be pleased that there is a level of that in general. I mean, we have exceptions in every case, but we have some who have excelled tremendously what they're doing. And I think that's a remarkable thing. I don't think we are, and is that just my prejudice? I mean, after all, it's us, you know, it's our kids. But America, you are exactly right that this is, yeah. And it's because the Christian paradigm, the Christian worldview has disappeared out there. It's still here, but it's not out there. And once that goes, then you lose all these benefits that have been coming. You didn't even think about it. The Protestant work ethic being such a wonderful thing and bearing such great fruit. And it's sort of like what our culture is doing. It's like you've got an apple tree that's been bearing apples, and they're taking an axe and chopping away at the trunk of the tree and wondering why there's not apples. You know, you're hacking away at the thing, the very foundation of the thing that was producing all the good fruits that made our nation what it was, and you're killing it by hacking away at it. And then there are some who would use their Christianity as their excuse not to work. That comes along. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a sense in which we were made in the image of a creator and a maker. So we want to create and make. There's a sense in which that's true, and that we derive pleasure from that activity. And I think you're exactly right. Work before the fall, work in, I believe we'll have work to do in heaven. But it won't be arduous. It won't be like it is now. The thorns and thistles won't be around. But it'll be pleasing. The worst thing you can be is idle with nothing to do. I keep running, you know, at retirement age, I keep running into these guys who retired. They live to retire, and now they're retired, and they're just absolutely miserable. Somebody, yeah, Oscar. Mm-hmm. Right, right. How do you motivate people and stuff? Yeah, yeah. And it's a miserable existence, really is. We spend our life hoping one day we can quit, and then when we quit, we're miserable. That's the point. I mean, there's a stage of life, and I'm, you know, looking at it where you don't have the energy level that you did. You can't do the things you could do when you're young, but to do nothing is not a pleasant thought. All right, we got to stop, man.